Hi, Jason.
Hey, Nicole.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to The Couple That Scare Us Together. And tonight, we are here to delight you with another tale of... what are we going to talk about tonight? No, I know exactly what we're going to talk about.
Well, what do you mean? You just cut me off.
Okay, well, you do it. Do the rundown.
All right, the rundown is... Number one, we will discuss Medusa.
Yes.
Number two, we will discuss the history of... tattoos.
I love it. Some magic associated.
And then three, we will discuss our new pet. And
my familiar.
Four, yes. Mm-hmm. Number four, we shall discuss Mother's Day.
Okay. All right. So that's what's on the agenda tonight. And just to give you some context, if you are busy parents and you are running your kids around, we are actually sitting outside in the car waiting for our two children to finish up at dance so that we can take them home. And we're carving out a little time so that we can record this podcast. So you do what it takes to get it done.
That's right. And both of us have pants on.
Pants on. Yes. At home, it's pants optional. In the car, it is pants required. So that's what's going on. It's a beautiful May day here in Hanover, PA. And they know where we live. And it's not a shock. And that doesn't happen very often in spring. It feels like it's always raining here. So I'm super excited about the warm weather. It's getting me excited for the summer. It's getting me excited for all the things that come along with it, like my garden and my bees and all of it.
The end of school.
The end of school for me, for sure. Get a break from teaching. So I thought last time we started with a card draw, some tarot reading, and I thought today we would do that again. Jason was so lovely to give me one of my Mother's Day gifts was a new deck called Sacred Mothers and Goddesses, and it's beautiful. And I thought it was just perfect since we're going to talk about Medusa today. I am a fan of Oracle cards, and that's what these are. These are Oracle cards. And I think last time we talked about the difference between the two. Claudia?
The creator's name is Claudia Olivus?
Olivas?
Olivu. Oliva. I don't know.
It's
French?
Italian.
Maybe
it's
Italian. I don't know.
Anyway,
yeah.
It's beautiful. She has a beautiful tarot deck. Where did you get them from? Or Oracle get?
From Amazon.
Amazon.
Actually.
Okay. Well, if you can find her very own website, she might prefer for us to purchase them there. And if so, I'll try to find a link. So they're beautiful. Let's do a little shuffle. Hopefully you sent your intentions for the week. Hopefully something resonates with you. If it doesn't, leave it. If it does, live by it.
I sent mine for sure. Let's go.
Okay. All right. So.
Card number one. Card number two.
Oh, this is a good one.
Card number three. These
love
are
it. These
visually
are beautiful.
Stunning.
They're so beautiful. They're so beautiful. And what I love most about them is they're kind of, for me, very unknown goddesses.
Let's get a picture.
Yeah, we'll take a picture of the spread. So I just did a 3-card draw, and I always like to talk about what I need to know, where am I now, and where am I going. That's sort of how I read and interpret maybe a 3-card draw.
How's that picture look?
It's beautiful.
Are you sure?
It's authentic. I'll lay them out nicely. But so the first card is the Abundance and Good Fortune card. That click is Jason taking pictures. The next one is working with ancestors in past lives. And the third card is to follow your bliss. So lovely cards all around.
Oh, these are excellent cards.
They're excellent cards. So just the abundance card is, do you want to pronounce that name? It's a Hindu goddess. Lakshmi?
Lakshmi. Yeah.
Lakshmi.
Yes.
It's a Hindu goddess who was born from the foam of the ocean carrying a lotus flower in her hand.
Oh, it's like the Odyssey.
Okay. All right. So she is known for, people call on her when you feel unfulfilled or you have some sort of like scarcity mindset.
It's like also an itch that you need to scratch maybe,
or you're just worried that you don't have enough time, enough money, enough resources. I feel
Understood.
that resonates with me. It really supports co-creation of the material objects, but also spiritual abundance in your life. People will draw on her for blessings of prosperity in your home and business. So that's a great one.
Yeah, it is for sure.
All right. And then the next one we drew was the ancestors and past lives. I have really been working very closely lately with past lives and really calling upon my ancestors and especially asking to see my past lives or kind of travel through while I lucid dream. It's a big one for me. So this is a moon goddess. I don't can't pronounce this person.
Her name is Kuyen.
K-U-Y-E-N. Goddess of Chile and Argentina. She represents the three phases of the moon. Love that. You can call on her when you want to get in touch with your ancestors, heal the things passed down through generations that continue to affect you, and to work with the Akashi records. I'm not kidding. And past lives aggressions.
No kidding.
Regressions.
Wow.
So that is kind of where we are now. And this is where we're going.
In our journey.
This is very good for us. This is really,
no, it hits home.
Hits home. And the last one is follow your bliss.
This is Lalita.
And this is another Hindu goddess, divine mother. She represents play, bliss, and love that is pure. And you call on her when you need to help and reach your highest potential, when you need help to stay true to your inner voice, and for help realign with pleasure as part of your divine birthright. And those cards really resonate with me. So hopefully you take a little bit something and they resonate with you too. I'd love to hear about it. You can always reach us at the couple that scares together at outlook.com and shoot us a quick email. Find us on Instagram. Follow us there. You can give me a message or a shout out there. If you have a question or you need a pull, you need a card pull, I'm more than happy to do it. And so anyway, and away we go.
And away we go.
All right, so tonight's topic, I think we teased last time that we ran out of time, but that we wanted to talk about Medusa. So Medusa's been a goddess that I don't work very closely with, but has always interested me, and probably have interested you, I would say, in a
kind of
literary
really
text
give
for
her,
well, version.
Yes, I would say, you know, reading about the gods and goddesses. You know, like back in high school and college and now teaching English, you know, there's definitely that part of the puzzle. But I will say that recently, I mentioned this, I believe, last week, but I had a dream that involved her. So that's what precipitated this, you know, topic, you might say.
Yeah. And I think for me, I've always, or in the near future, the last few years, done a lot of deity work, and it's never been Jason's thing, and he's never really connected. And I don't know if he really understands that for me, there are living embodiments and things that bring direct purpose to my life and not just characters that were once existed.
Sure.
Okay.
I mean, I'm with you as far as.
Right. So I think that you prompted this because you said, if they're real or if you want to show me or bring it on.
I said, basically, you know, in a nutshell here, that, you know, that I'm open and I'm willing participant. And if you want to make yourself known, then I'm willing to listen, to communicate. To see and hear and feel.
And now we have now gone back and done a little boundary work. So it's not all the time, every time, and open to anything. But we've put some guardrails on it. Jason has. And that's
sure.
been very, very successful. But he did have this very vivid dream of Medusa, which got us to really think about not only the origin story of Medusa, but what it means in the context of your life currently.
I had a vivid dream in that the deity, the goddess, came to me in some fashion, in a dream, I guess. I don't know if it was a lucid dream. I have no idea. But she presented herself, and she urged me to get a tattoo.
Yes. That's super specific.
Yes. Yes.
So, in the original story of Medusa, she's a beautiful woman who's had a very positive role. But tragedy falls upon her when she is confronted with an endless hardship brought upon by male actions. Medusa was once a beautiful woman who was then raped, killed, and beheaded by various gods. None of that's funny. However, even in the face of tragedy and disgrace, the Medusa was portrayed as meaningful. Following the moment her head was removed, Pegasus flew out of her body, representing the birth of beauty. Just as the Medusa was powerless to fight against the repressive actions forced upon her, so too was she powerless against the continuing metamorphosis of the myth, which resulted in the more popular Medusa myth commonly known today. So in this popular version, and we probably know this from media primarily, right?
Yeah, like TV, sure. Movies, book series,
right.
All that stuff.
She's a monster with a hair of a thousand snakes. She's under a curse which causes everything she looks to turn to stone.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So her monstrous image is depicted in all sorts of art, historical art, right? And that the myth is probably more than just a facade. But if you dig deep, there's some really powerful imagery that comes from her, and there's a really an underlining story that I think that people haven't really delved too much into it.
Okay. So how so?
Well, when we were starting to discover this, we went to our friend Jen. She has a wonderful local apothecary shop, a witch shop, a metaphysical shop, and we love her dearly, and she's always very, very good at, I don't know, I wouldn't say redirecting, but sort of giving us, narrowing down some of our ideas or giving us some focus when we talk about what was going on. So we told her what was going on with Jason and how Medusa was coming to her and the origin story. And the first thing she asked was, are you working with girls that have been abused?
Traumatized,
yeah. Something from trauma. And the first, our knee-jerk reaction is to say, well, no, not really. Not really.
Not exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we are both teachers. But Jason has just recently accepted a new position. And by the way, you never always put those two things together in context. But now, in hindsight, it makes sense. He will work with a population that may be, and especially a population that's more female, young women.
Yes, for sure.
As a teacher, that have faced trauma. So we think maybe she's coming to say, not only will I support you in this venture, but that's your mission. That's what you're supposed to do. And I will help guide you.
To sort of bridge the gap.
Right. Because a Medusa is a character that people often call upon when they need defending against particularly violence that was inflicted upon them by men.
I gotcha. I mean, it makes, like, looking back now, it makes definite sense. And she even went as far as to, like, tell me where to put it, like, on the middle of my forearm.
Right. Like, that's very...
So it's visible.
Very, very specific. Yes. So it's an interesting take on specifically how that interacts in your life, because... my assumption is always that she would come to a woman. Like, why come to you? But not if you are going to be her representation or she can stand and support you in this journey. That makes sense.
Yes, I agree totally.
You're great. Okay. All right. All right. So the origin story goes, again, that Medusa was the stunning young woman. She had beautiful ringlets of hair. She was very alluring in her beauty, and she had many suitors. That while praying at the temple of Athena, she catches the eye of the sea god Poseidon, who rapes her or seduces her, depending on the story that you read, in the temple.
Whichever.
Consent's important, but apparently not back then. Athena, who's enraged at her for defiling the temple, or perhaps jealous of her beauty, whichever way you interpret that, takes out revenge on poor Medusa. It has been noted that Athena, who's the goddess of war, rarely supports women. Perhaps she is the precursor to the jealous older woman, so often betrayed in European fairy tales, that were to follow.
Huh.
To exact her... I've always said that women sometimes are cruelest to women. And especially maybe women that are older than young women. So,
I have no opinion. I can't really offer an opinion on that because I'm not a woman.
So Athena takes away Medusa's most prized feature, her beautiful hair. Again, this is reminiscent. say that word.
Reminiscent.
Yeah, thank you. Of later fairy tales, specifically Rapunzel, who was punished for sleeping with a prince by having all of her hair removed. Athena makes Medusa unappealing to men by turning her hair into withering snakes. It's a classic case of victim blaming. If that isn't enough, Athena assures Medusa will forever remain alone by gifting her with a gaze that turns others to stone in an instant. Here, we witness the creation of the original death stare, a weapon that has since been passed on to generations of women. Have you ever had a woman death stare you?
I have, yes.
Yeah, it's powerful, isn't it?
I mean, it...
It's a curse all of its own.
It feels bad. Like, it, you know, it's supposed to feel bad.
It is. Right. Over time, the death stare has been less potent and less deadly, but it's by no means less scary. I know because my mother possesses it, because my mom used to have a death stare that would take my breath away. So, Medusa, however, did not wish to use her powers on mortals, instead retreated to a dark cave. She could not look upon a friend or an animal without killing them, so she lived a life of solitude. However, this was not to last. Even though Medusa never wanted to harm anyone, the knowledge that she had the power to do so meant that she could live a quiet life. Soon enough, men came in search of her, and eventually, Perseus, the son of Zeus, finds her and cuts off her head while she sleeps.
That's not nice of
him. Hmm?
No, it's just poor Medusa.
Yes. Well, the alternate origin story sees Medusa begins life as a Gorgon monster, born of two sea monsters and one of three daughters. As a Gorgon monster, Medusa is terrible and fierce and is much less sympathetic than her alter ego, once human form.
Sea monster.
Yeah. But what this version lacks in beauty, she makes up in companionship. Because in this version, Medusa lives with her two sisters. These Gorgons are described as having snakes on their heads, wings on their back, and large mouths with lolling tongues.
And she sounds wonderful.
She sounds great. Whether the sisters were immune to the Medusa's death stare, perhaps they had the same powers themselves, or they were protected by the darkness of the cave, we do not know. We do know that her sisters mourned her death. They gave chase to Perseus after he murdered Medusa. And he escaped their clutches thanks to Athena's help. She definitely had a thing against Medusa. Upon Perseus' escape, the sisters release a loud, mournful howl, which is chilling to the bone.
What's the movie or the TV show where there's a line about a sea monster? You know what I'm talking about? Well, when he talks about a sea monster?
No.
Is that from The Office? Or what's maybe. That from?
I don't know. It's not like The Lightning Thief. You're not talking about something. Okay.
No, he talks to, it's a line about a woman and he calls her a sea monster, but I can't remember what it's from. It's killed me right now that I can't
remember. I don't know. I don't know.
Listen, if you guys know the one I'm talking about, please reach out.
Pam or something calls one of the men from the downstairs warehouse a sea monster?
Yes. Yes, The Office. Yeah. It's from The Office.
Mike, we took a jaunt. He's back in, folks. Once Medusa is decapitated, she's reduced to an object and used as a weapon.
The sea monster.
Even post-mortem, Medusa can turn mortals and monsters into stone. After Perseus evades Medusa's sisters, he happens upon the beautiful princess Andromeda, who is tied to a rock waiting to be sacrificed to the sea monster.
Perfect. She's ready for you.
Who is terrorizing her father's land. Again, consent is important.
I'm just tied to a rock and waiting for you, Perseus.
That's right. She tied herself there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is still literally flying high on winged sandals, swoops down to save Andromeda from impending doom. After instructing her to close her eyes, Perseus pulls Medusa's head out of the bag and faces it towards the sea monster, turning it to stone, which is ironic, considering the monster is probably a relative of Medusa's parents, if you believe that story. The scene unfolds in front of an audience watching from the shoreline. Amongst the crowd stood Andromeda's father, the king, Andromeda's fiance, who by all accounts was kind of a loser, and some other unimportant locals. They are too far away to hear Perseus's warning, and after gazing into Medusa's eyes, they too are turned to stone.
Oh, no.
This leaves Andromeda free to marry Perseus, and Perseus free to step into the role of the king, since the death of Andromeda's father has left the position conveniently open. After this incident, Perseus goes on to turn many people into stone using Medusa's head. We quickly come to realize that Perseus causes more destruction than Medusa's head had ever caused on its own. Yet he is hailed as a hero, and Medusa is remembered as a monster to be feared and despised.
Well, I mean, one's a man and one's a woman.
Well, that's right. Because in modern culture, Medusa has become an iconic femme fatale, embodying both beauty and danger in one mythical creature.
Why not just put it on my arm?
There you go.
Let's go.
She is a monster.
You're coming with me everywhere I go, honey.
But also a deeply desirable woman. She has become highly sexualized. And the act of cutting off her head has come to represent an erotic conquest.
I like this idea.
She has been weaponized and sexualized, which given very little thought to who Medusa was before she was found. Medusa, for all her power, did not use it to her own advantage. She did not seek out privilege or revenge and only wished to keep it to herself. She did not ask for fame or fortune, yet men continually sought her out for their own gain. She avoided inflicting harm on others and existing only in the darkness and for the sake of others. She is a woman who has experienced violence and injustice, yet she continues to show compassion for others. To me, she is not a monster or a sexual object. I'm okay.
Okay, you're asking.
Yes.
But you're asking.
I'm not asking you to respond. I know. I think she's a woman doing her best to be a good person. With maybe some wiggly hair.
I mean, those are snakes, but okay. What do I think of her? Well, I think she's going to make a great tattoo. I think
she's a badass lady.
I think that she's like, hey, I'm here to help you.
I think so too.
All I need you to do is, you know,
is
put this.
Put your undying loyalty.
Exactly.
And burn it into my physical skin and my temple.
Yes.
Okay, no big deal.
You're going to carry you with me until the day you die.
That leads us to tattoos.
I say okay.
So while I was researching Medusa, it brought me to a site called the Medusa Tattoo, because I was Googling Medusa Tattoo. And it's a website that focuses on women who have been traumatized, and they have taken back their power by getting this particular version of Medusa tattooed on them. So it's by Care Florida, and you can just Google the Medusa tattoo and it comes up. And I'm just going to read to you what they talk about on this website. It says, while many know Medusa as a snake-haired figure from the Greek mythology whose gaze could turn you to stone, you may not know the meaning behind a tattoo of her. Medusa is a figure from Greek mythology who was one of the three Gorgon sisters. While descriptions of Medusa have varied from beautiful to grotesque, fair to monstrous, she is best known for having living venomous snakes on her head in place of hair and the ability to turn those who look into her eyes into stone. In the later and wildly read retelling of Ovid and the Poseidon sexually assaulted her and impregnated Medusa in Athena's sacred temple. Seeking revenge, Athena transformed Medusa into a snake-haired monster and turned onlookers to stone. Medusa tattoo has become popular among women who have experienced sexual assault. By reclaiming the Medusa identity, they are dispelling the belief that they are being victimized means that they ought to be cursed or punished. Today, the survivors of sexual assault use tattoos of Medusa to fight back against their narrative that victims should be shamed, blamed, or punished for their assault. Medusa and her story have been reclaimed as a symbol of strength and power, and her image is also being used as a mark of protection against evils. So I thought that was just like a really cool thing to add. And I want to make sure that everyone understands too, that Jason isn't going to have that tattoo on his body because he understands he's not a woman who's been sexualized. That's right. That would be wrong. That would be in poor taste because his story is not that story. But he really thinks of himself as anybody who can bring peace, guidance, help.
I think all those things.
All of those things.
I think it's my purpose to work with young people. I've been doing it for years, most of whom are from, you know, troubled backgrounds, and it's been mostly boys, honestly. So in this next venture, it'll be teenage girls as well, so that will be even, you know, more of a challenge. So I think that there's a reason that I dreamt about this
Yes.
Tattoo and, you know, that experience.
And your tattoo will really be an act of reverence and solidarity and...
It's just more about, like, the feminine power, like a rebirth.
Sure.
There's, I just lost the word I was thinking of, but, yeah, I mean, it's not in any way to belittle, you know, that group or, that you spoke
right,
of.
Right, or make light of, because it's not that. But it also is, in a world where I think there's so much newfound hate for women, I really do, you being a very masculine man, standing up and saying, I support women and I support their natural gifts, and I am a protector of that, and a gentleman, and all the things
for
we want our men to be.
To help people.
To and be, I think that is
those
wonderful.
I don't want to complicate it. I mean, I just want to, you know, help kids in need, whether they're boys or girls, frankly.
Awesome. So let's talk about tattoos, since you're putting it on your body.
All right, let's do it.
I think it's important that I chime in here and just apologize, because I don't want to wax poetic about he's just a man and he has flaws and foibles and he's not perfect. And if I made him out to be, I want to apologize to the women out there. He isn't. He's a buffoon in all the ways that you know him to be. But I love him and I am very proud of him and I do compliment him. But I've realized that he also likes to be treated poorly, and that is why he stays.
That's what I like. Thank you. I like the abuse for my wife.
All right, so let's talk about tattoos, because Jason and I are tattoo enthusiasts, and I said when we talked about the Medusa tattoo, I said, let's talk a little bit about tattoos, and you research one aspect, I'll research another, and we'll come together. And so Jason, in true Jason form, pulled off very sort of historical facts behind tattoos, which I think you need so that you can know where we're going, which is into magic land for me.
Correct? Sounds good. Let's hit it.
Okay, let's do it. So before we do that, I know you're desperate to tell people to make your... He's going to make a pitch here. Make a pitch.
All right, here's my pitch. I have been contemplating this tattoo for quite a while. As of today, I have one tattoo. My wife and I have the same. That's on our forearm. Now, the person who gave me this tattoo... is no longer working in the business, or I can't find her. I'm not sure. One of the two. Probably, I just can't track her down.
And we really liked her, but the idea is he hasn't been able to find an artist. It hasn't really clicked yet as far as timing and availability. So he's looking for an artist.
So what I am, you know, looking to do is use this platform to reach out to anybody
for his own benefit.
Yes,
for selfish reasons.
For my own benefit, I have an idea of, you know, what I want. Just need to find the right person.
So, if you are in a 2-hour radius around Pennsylvania, around southern Pennsylvania, perhaps, if you, any, we could drive a bit. But, and you're a tattoo artist and you reach out to us and let us know, he's looking for a black and white rendition of Medusa. We have kind of a couple drafts that somebody can help us put together that is, I would say, has an air to realism, but knows about fantasy and deity work so that it looks like her and kind of conveys power. But he wants something that is simple, black and white, maybe some really lovely shading. That's what he wants. I know what he wants.
Everybody
don't
what I want.
Articulate what you want?
Pretty well, actually. Yeah.
Always
you're telling everybody what I want.
You always complain that I do that, but I have the
words.
No,
you have a good idea.
Of course I do. I have good taste, but you always like what I pick.
No, I do.
I know what you like.
Listen, obviously you have good
taste. I have good
taste.
I picked you. So, that's good. So, call us, email us, reach out on Instagram, get a hold of us. Tell Jason where to go, who to call. To get his tattoo. All right, so let's talk about tattoos.
All right, let's go.
Let's go. So Jason put together a lovely information about tattoos and where they started.
I did indeed.
Okay, so tattoos have been part of human culture for thousands of years, with evidence dating back to ancient civilizations such as the Egyptians, Greeks, and Romans. The word tattoo is believed to be originated from the Polynesian word tatu, or tatu spelled T-A-T-U, which means to mark something.
Like your arm, like for example.
For, yes.
Or maybe something more, who knows?
Something more? What does that
mean? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You could have them anywhere.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Indigenous peoples around the world, including Maori of New Zealand and the, take it. I'll spell it. A-I-N-U.
A-I-N-U?
I guess.
And Ainu?
Yes. And the Native Americans have practiced tattooing for cultural and spiritual purposes for centuries. In the 18th century, European explorers brought tattooing back to the West, where it's become associated with sailors, pirates, and outlaws. And that is why I have tattoos. Tattoos often served as marks of identity, allegiance, and rebellion. My tattoos fit all three categories. They're all about how I identify myself, how I associate my allegiance to people, because I have one with my sister and one with you. And they are absolutely, in my family, an act of rebellion. I love taboo. I love every minute of it.
Taboo.
Right. So, tattoo gained popularity in Western society during the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Please don't critique me. It sickens me. Thank you so much. Particularly among circus performers, soldiers, and members of subcultures like bikers and punks. Now your grandmother has one, not your grandmother.
I would align more closely with the circus performer.
I have to pick one?
No, I'm saying you're going to...
Yes.
That'd be me.
Okay, fine. Me too, I guess. The invention of the electric tattoo in the late 19th century by Samuel O'Reilly, hey Irish, revolutionized the tattooing process, making it faster and more efficient.
How'd they do it before with like rocks and like a stick and like ink?
You've seen Moana.
Basically with it. Yeah, that's true. I have.
You've seen Moana. We watch it all the time. But yes, I think it is just like
a needle.
Yeah.
Or
I think there's been different.
And like, you know, some ink of, you know, plant dye or something, and they're just putting it in their arm.
Beautiful. That's not research-based at all.
No,
just
I'm just
speaking off the cuff.
On the fly.
People.
Let's go.
In the 20th century, tattoos became more mainstream, with tattoo parlors opening in the major cities and tattoo gaining acceptance as a form of self-expression and art.
That's what I'm looking for.
Me too. Today, tattoos, not really. That's
no,
not
I mean a parlor.
A
place to go.
For sure. Today, tattoos are widely practiced form of body modification and art with a diverse range of styles and techniques influenced by cultural, artistic, and
technological advancements.
Okay. So, and I think that's true. If you look on, like I like to follow on TikTok, there are some things that they feature wonderful artists from around the world and their art and how specific it is. They have one that does their art looks like thread, like patchwork, like your quilt.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, it's incredible. It's incredible. So, yeah, I appreciate all.
Is it expensive?
I would imagine. Yes. I think he's famous. So, yes. One of the oldest tattoos in history was discovered on a body of the...
Of Otzi, the
Iceman. A well-preserved mummy found in the Alps between Austria and Italy in 1991. He lived around 3,300 BCE during the Copper Age, making his tattoos approximately 5,300 years old.
Jeez.
His tattoos were located on various parts of his body, including his lower spine, right knee, and ankle, and were made using charcoal, possibly other natural pigments. This purpose of the tattoos is still debated among researchers, with theories suggesting they may have had therapeutic, religious, or social significance. I'm going to talk about therapeutic significance in just a minute.
5,000 years ago?
Yes.
That's incredible.
So, tattoos have become increasingly more popular in recent decades for some reasons. Social acceptance. Tattoos have gained greater acceptance in mainstream society, with attitudes towards body art becoming more positive.
For sure. Because we're
teachers.
Teachers, even. And you see, like, teachers.
Everybody has tattoos. Yeah, it's no big deal. 20 years ago, when I started teaching, you would cover them up, for sure. And now, that's not true. This acceptance has reduced the stigma previously associated with tattoos, making them more appealing to a wider range of people. Self-expression. Many individuals view tattoos as a form of self-expression, allowing them to communicate with their identity and beliefs and personal experience through art on their bodies.
That's for sure.
Yes.
I mean, just think about, like, you and I as a married couple with the same tattoo.
Yes. So. Celebrity influence. Celebrities and public figures often showcase their tattoos. I guess. That's never
Daniel
my Day-Lewis thing.
Daniel Day-Lewis has a bunch of them.
Does he have a bunch of tattoos?
Of course.
Most overrated actor ever.
He's amazing.
Nobody likes him. They're faking. Contributing their popularity among
fans.
Shout
out to you, sir.
Mm-hmm. He's a cobbler now. He's not calling you. Okay. And then advancements in tech and tattooing technology, because now it doesn't hurt. Well, right. Most, it's not licked on by kittens.
So they say.
You know it doesn't hurt that badly.
No,
it's safe. It's precise. And they make the experience, if you go to a good one, really pleasant. And cultural trends, right? Such as the rise in tattoo reality TV shows, tattoo conventions, social media. TikTok's always featuring them. I love to look at them that way. And now it's super available, right? We were just looking the other day in our small town, and we have a ton of tattoo shops.
Five
sure.
at least here.
Yeah, so now you don't have to travel unless you're you and you want a specific kind. So
yes, Medusa.
Yes. So that's the tattoo background.
She spoke to me.
She spoke to you. You're getting her on you. And when you do, we're going to post it for everyone
to see.
It's
going to be amazing.
Well, so I want you to think about this, because I want to talk about tattoos.
Sigils.
As sigils.
Really?
So they are mine. And no one really understands this, or I feel like I have a hard time communicating this. So I found a specific tattoo place that does this. I'll tell you
Where
about
is
it. Well, I'll tell you about it.
See, now I want to know. You're like, piqued my interest for
sure. Piqued your interest. Okay.
You did.
So this is from their website. Okay.
Okay.
It says sigils are
pictorial
symbols used in magic to represent a deity, or they can be created with the intention for a desired outcome through magic. I make them all the time. They manifest the sigils essentially through. She meditatively sketches them, and then she does a final draft in her sketchbook, every aspect addressing specific needs, goals, or desires. Then it's tattooed on an individual in a ritualistic manner, directly infusing magic into that work on your body.
Where is this place?
I'm going to tell you about
it. My God, I want to go there.
Okay, so a sigil is, in magic terms, oftentimes we'll write out something on a piece of paper. This is how you make a sigil traditionally. You write something out on a piece of paper. It could be like, wealth is coming, or I am wealthy, or so-and-so and I will be in love, or whatever your sigil is.
Like,
prosperity and health.
It's cold in the freezer.
That would not be a sigil.
Okay.
So you write out a short phrase. You omit the vowels. You start to copy down the consonants that don't repeat. You take what's left and you put them into a picture that often looks like lines, waves. When did I do this?
I have no idea.
When I made my bracelet. I made my very own bracelet and I created it on a piece of
paper. What are you talking about?
It's stamped into my bracelet. My cuff.
What? Oh, that's
my cuff.
Yes,
so I created my own sigil. It has a message on there. It then is a picture representation of that message that no one else could interpret except for me. So mine has little dots and lines and a pattern. I then put my energy and I did my own magic to it.
Tell everybody out there, you know, what it's all about as far as what you're talking about.
My bracelet.
When you say your bracelet, because they're like, what the hell is she talking
Jason,
about?
Jason, for our anniversary this year, took me to one of his friends who makes their own jewelry. He was extremely talented. And I made my own cuff, a gold cuff. It's called Merlin's Gold. And I hammered it, created it start to finish, have pictures of me and video of me doing it. And it was a beautiful experience. And I loved every minute of it. And
if you want to, I can post
a picture
video
of it
as well.
Sure. Yeah, that would be
and
great.
Picture of the bracelet too. It's amazing.
Yes, it is amazing. And so I was so proud of it, and towards the end I said, hey, would you mind, could we stamp something on the inside of it, because for me this represents protection and I wear it every day. I put it right on my wrist and it is, I cannot exist without it. So it's beautiful, and I polish it and I meditate over it and I activate that sigil constantly. So that is sigils in the way that they are represented by regular magic. When I got all my tattoos, though, my tattoos are designed with purpose in mind, and I meditated on them, and I charge mine under a full moon. So I sit out under a full moon, and I charge my tattoos, the one that are visible on my skin, under a full moon. So to me, I understand this. I understood this before I went to this person's website. Okay.
I don't do any. I don't charge any tattoos.
Okay. Well, maybe you should. So
maybe I should.
So this person says, when I create the sigils, they are absolutely meant to appear rudimentary. I'm drawing inspirations from some of the earliest markings, combined with ideas of alchemy, something lost in occult texts, notes in a witch's spell book, and the scrawlings of an ancient shaman. These works are an art all of their own, a magical art. So I'm going to show you their website, and we'll talk about it in just a second. But I had two testimonials I wanted to share about this process. Okay? So this is Mike's story. About a year ago, I got my healing sigil tattoo from Storm at Art on U Studios when it was in Magna, Utah on Magna Main Street. It was an experience I'll never forget. After the tattoo was completed, I felt completely at ease and absolutely calm. All the elements that are in the sigil are specific to me and based off things I go through or deal with, struggle with in my life. Whenever I have something come up, I can look at the sigil and everything feels better and I can get through it. I'm covered in a lot of tattoos, all done by Storm, and the sigil is by far the most important and the most meaningful one I have. This was absolutely a magical experience that I will cherish for the rest of my life. So that's Mike's story.
Okay.
This is Sue's story.
All right, Sue.
My healing sigil experience. When Storm approached me with the idea, I was excited. He told me to write down or tell him what I wanted the healing sigil to do. At the time, I was angry a lot because of the certain circumstances with a family member. I feared going on the freeway because of that, to me, unsafe roads and drivers, and going in and out of a depression cycle that was getting worse. So that's what I told him I needed help with. I saw the design when I got there for my appointment. I loved it. It was done in a private session before any of the artists were in. Storm did a blessing ritual with incense and a small chanting prayer. The mood was set, and I was it was totally relaxing. The music was low and constant, tribal sounds, totally relaxing and not overpowering. Just relaxing. He began tattooing, and I was prepared for it to be painful since it was on my inner forearm. Surprised, it hurt less than some of the other tattoos. Also, as it was going, it felt like pain, anger, and anxiety were being released. I can't explain it, but that's what it felt like. Before I knew it, we were done, and as I looked at my newest tattoo, I was in tears. The good kind. The releasing kind. I felt like a great weight had been lifted, and I was happy, which at that point in time was a rare thing. I was getting ready to say goodbye to some of my chosen family. Didn't see a clear future, and was all in on all not in a good place. I'm not saying that the tattoo changed all that in a flash, but it certainly reminded me to be positive and keep the negative thoughts at bay. Think before I blurted out something hateful in anger to said family member, and boy, did it help with the freeway anxiety. I still don't like the freeway, but I'm just not worried about certain death. certain death in seconds of getting on. I just try and keep calm and not let the idiots around me distract me. And I need all the extra help. I just touch my sigil and get good thoughts going. I still get a cry, but I don't dwell on it. I let it out in various forms and let it go. I don't stew on the stuff that gets me angry for months anymore. And it's absolutely freeing. And since trying to keep negativity out, the depression has gotten much easier to deal with because, again, I don't dwell on things that I can't change and have no control over anymore. Our talk after the session helped me with that. I'm not sure if Storm knows how freeing and therapeutic this tattoo was to me and how much I look forward to the next one because one is just not enough. Now I have the other things that need to be addressed. I also happen to know a few others that were lucky enough to be included in this batch of sigils and had similar experiences. Some of us discussed our sessions and we had the most identical recollections. Storm is onto something special, dare I say magical. I can highly recommend getting one of the healing sigil tattoos because for me, it was truly therapy. So that's
okay, Sue.
Sue's story.
Rock and roll.
Uh-huh. So this, I wanted to tell to touch on this because I really felt like for me, they're a magical experience. And I think for a lot of people, they are. I've often had people describe tattoos as therapy. Like, I go, ink therapy. That's like a common phrase.
I guess I don't particularly feel that way.
Okay.
But I enjoyed the experience. It was fun. It was a shared experience, I guess, yes. Particularly because
it was with me.
We did it together. So in that way, it was kind of like ritualistic.
Yes.
But I don't feel, you know, it's not like my, you know, it's not like life changing for me. I didn't leave there and feel like, man,
But maybe it would be if you had a healing sigil. You just had a tattoo put on you that had significance.
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
I think it's valid. The meaning behind it wasn't the intent back then. Maybe it would if you did have that experience.
What do these tattoos look like?
I can show you. So the tattoo shop that I'm speaking of is Art on You. It's now moved to Poughkeepsie, New York. And if you go to their website, you can see some of the images. You can read the testimonials. There's more to read. You can also see the sketchbook. You get a copy of that with you. And you can see from this one here, like this one has Sue's. She wanted to focus on anger and anti-anxiety and anger causes depression, loses motivation. She wanted to release all of that. So he wrote out all the things. Right, that are more specific, were blurred out. And then it comes in here, he removes all the consonants and creates the sigil, meditates on it, probably gets inspiration, I'm going to guess, from spirit, and then creates a one-of-a-kind unique tattoo.
Okay.
That he then charges and performs a ritual. Because I think that's what tattoos are. They can be ritualistic. Sure. Even in the most simplistic form, taking you back to a time in life was, you know, that when you were young and like, silly, it's still a ritual, right? Even you without there with Tweety Bird on your ankle. I know that there someone is. I've seen you people that did that. Tasmanian Devil. You must regret that by
Bugs.
Now. But you probably think to a time when you were reckless and careless and free, and it's real. It's ritualistic in nature. So anyway, that's my take on tattoos and realistic nature. So I have one more thing. I know this is lengthy, but I want one more thing. So in doing this, I researched also, I came across the most haunted tattoo shop, and it's in Texas. Okay? So you have to look this up. We're gonna make sure we link this, but it says, whether it's our antique mirrors, collectibles, the historic building, or our location overlapping where the Battle of the Alamo took place, Ink Culture Tattoos in Texas is the most haunted tattoo shop. Don't worry, our spirits are happy, haunts, and no one's ever felt a malicious presence. Our paranormal activity consists of regular orb sightings, voices, doors opening and closing, and they've devoted an entire page to this account. So if you go to their page, it's Texas. Oh, I'm going to pull it up so that you can see it. They have they post the videos on their website. So yeah, if you go to inkculturetattoos.com, they have.
That's the place where you got to go.
Okay. Well.
Texas.
We got to go to Texas, I guess. Well, anyway, they have on here, they put all the footage up.
Get out of here.
And doors opening, and they post it so that you can go right to YouTube and watch it, or right to their website.
That stuff here.
Yes.
Right in our house. That
turns the life on by itself. They have a haunted tattoo shop. So if you want to get your spook on and also get a tattoo, this is where you go.
San Antonio.
There you go, to Ink Culture Tattoos. Ink Culture Tattoos.
Okay.
Let's go.
Not a sponsor, but.
Not a sponsor, but you go to the Alamo.
Could be
sure.
A sponsor.
All right, so that's it. That was a long one, folks. If you hung in there, but kudos to
wait,
you.
There's one more thing.
What's one more thing?
We got a kitten.
I got a kitten. Jason got me a kitten. Got me a kitten. He has, first of all, he is known for a lifetime that all I've wanted is a black kitten, like a black cat. And when we got my daughter's cat, she wanted this Persian Himalayan cat, who's ridiculous. His name is Thackeray Banks. And they only came in white, And so he's
they only came
they only came in white. And he's big and white and fluffy, and he is her beloved. And I love him. He's a lovely little cat. He's not my cat, but he's a lovely little cat, and I cherish him. But Jason came home a couple weeks ago and said, "Do you want a black cat? I found you one." Like, somebody at work has they have kittens. They want you to have, you can have one. And so we brought this little black cat home named Salem.
That's not exactly, no, I came over and said,
"Do you want this cat?" I'm bringing it home. I mean, he didn't say, "I got you." I mean, he didn't say, "No, you have no choice." But bringing it. Here it is. This little cat is the feistiest, sweetest, most attached little cat in the whole world. And he, bless his heart, he hisses and then cuddles up at the same time. He's perfect. I'm pretty sure he is lucid dreaming with me and pulling me in and out of portals. He's got a full-time job with that. He stands guard in my bedroom, and I'm delighted by him. I'm delighted. If you don't own a black cat, what's wrong with you? He's my familiar. What's wrong with you? What are you doing with your life if you don't own a black cat? Get out there. Go out there and get a black cat. They're amazing.
What are you eating?
Icy. 11 Icy. And the owners of our house came by and told us this house always had a black cat on its property. So now we have one.
Did we already tell that story last week, right?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so welcome home, Salem. We'll post a cat pic. He's feisty. He's got yellow eyes and pointy ears, and I love him.
He's beautiful.
Beautiful. All right. Anything else we want to update anybody with? We'll be back next week with another episode.
That's it. I can't think. That's it.
I
can't think of anything else.
Well, I hope you have a magical week. And we'll see you next week.
See ya.